Hey everybody, it's the Green Korean. I just wanted to fix something here at the very top of the show. This episode features our guest, Dave the Nerd. You can find him on Twitter at DaveTheNerd_DNC. The DNC stands for the name of his podcast, Dave's Nerd Compendium, and a couple of times during this episode, we refer to it as DNC, but we never get the full title of his podcast out there, and I really would like for you to check it out, especially if you're looking for great geeky and nerd content. So the name of the podcast, once again, is Dave's Nerd Compendium. And now, please enjoy the show.
You're a DC fan, right?
Actually, I'm more of an indie fan, although I do favor some of the DC characters over Marvel characters.
Okay. Dude, you can't do that. If somebody gives you like the Ford Chevy argument, you can't go Volvo, you know? You got to have a dog in the DC Marvel fight, you know?
See,
you can't just
thing
go
is,
like amalgam universe. That would be the best answer. Just like, I prefer the amalgams.
But no, I like the obscure characters. Screw Batman and Superman. I like Nightwing. I like Green Arrow. You go to Marvel, I like Colossus and Moon Knight.
I hear you, man. I mean, I'm a big Aquaman fan.
I just identify with Batman. I dig on the Batman. And then one thing that I'm not a fan of is how DC is mining the past or going prequels with a lot of their TV series. The Flash is great. I love what they're doing there. But when you watch, like, you know, they're doing Krypton. Who wants to hear about Kal-El's grandfather?
So lame, dude. Because he's not going to have powers.
Right? It's just Grandpa. That's the name of the show, Grandpa.
It would be interesting if it was just like super out there and just about a regular dude. Like, could you imagine if they did it like Breaking Bad, but on Krypton? Like, it's just not even about Superman at all. Like, nothing to do with superheroes, just about a dude on Krypton making Kryptonian meth.
So instead of the crystal or the blue crystal or whatever it was called, was it green?
That would be, well, remember in the 80s Superman movies, he gets that little crystal or whatever to guide him to
the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah. Now I'm just going to imagine that's just a huge chunk of meth.
These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know. These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know. Some of them are Davids,
but most of us are Daves.
They all have their own hands, but they come from different moms.
Welcome to episode 15 of the Dave Podcast. This week, David Gilmore.
We are the Daves he knows, we are the Daves he knows.
These are the Daves I know, I know.
We are the Daves he knows,
you know. These are the Daves.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dave Podcast. I'm the Green Korean.
I'm Octopus Caveman.
Joining us on today's show, we have Dave the Nerd. Welcome to the Dave Podcast.
Great to be at a place where it's named after me.
Exactly. We did name it after you. Please don't come after us and sue us.
I'll think about it.
Just so we kind of continue on what we were talking about before we actually started the show, we were talking about a whole bunch of comic book stuff and TV stuff. So just to continue that conversation, the Bat Universe itself could be, you know, how they're starting to build all these franchises or building movie cinematic universes. Forget about the DC cinematic universe. Just build me a Gotham cinematic universe. I would love that.
They're kind of
that's a brilliant idea.
TV series.
I'm tired of TV shows where it's like sort of a superhero TV show, but not really. Like, we've got a Batman TV show that doesn't have fucking Batman in it. And then we had a Superman TV show where Superman wasn't really Superman. Like, can't we just have a Batman TV show where it's Batman being Batman? We haven't had that since the 60s.
Look at what came out of Smallville. You have a person who, next to Gene Hackman from the original Superman movies, the best Lex Luthor there is in Michael Rosenbaum. Better by far than anything Jesse Eisenberg could have in his wettest of wet dreams.
That's a weird choice, man.
Granted, you had one of the Duke boys playing Jonathan Kent. That right there is hilarity in itself. An outlaw from one TV show playing the righteous Bible thumper.
I've never really given that show a big chance. Like, I've seen a few episodes. I'm not a huge fan of Superman, and I think I gave it about a season or two, just jumped in just to see what it was all about, and I thought, oh, okay, this is respectable, but maybe I'll go back and revisit a little bit more. I'm almost done with The Batman. I'm just a couple episodes shy of finishing that series.
It's great, man. I mean, also, you know, Reno Romano, so, you know, he's forever my Batman.
Yeah, he does a solid job, yeah.
But which Robin are they portraying? Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Timothy Drake, Damian?
It's Dick Grayson.
Eh.
Yeah.
At least it's one of the better Robins.
But there's so much Batman history that's still yet untouched. I have yet to see Jason Todd portrayed well animated, with the exception of Under the Red Hood.
Right.
Well, just the animated movies from DC are amazing. And they're, you know, the Green Lantern animated movie, so much better than the actual live action movie. The same goes, well, we'll see what happens with Wonder Woman. But that Wonder Woman animated movie, they could just turn that into a live action.
You know, dude, until I get a Lobo movie, I don't give a shit anymore.
There was an article I was reading not that long ago that said that Snyder was actually looking into bringing in Lobo and to some sort of, I don't know if it was a TV series or a movie, but was a vintage Lobo, not this newer incarnation.
The new Lobo pisses me off so much.
I haven't read any Lobo. What's the difference between the new and the old?
They redesigned him, and now he's this like skinny, he looks like he's from Twilight. So he's this like skinny, kind of like emo dude, and he showed up, and classic Lobo, he called him an imposter and killed him, and now you have Phobo. It's like fake lame Lobo.
Yeah, Lobo's supposed to be like this 350-pound freaking biker from hell.
Right.
And the new Lobo's like Robert Pattinson.
Oh. Yeah, he's just like this skinny, lithe little, like I don't know, he just looks like a puss. He looks like somebody that, like, classic Lobo would have eaten.
You know, I do know that they were talking about, what's his name, cast for Lobo. Like, if they were doing dream casting, everybody wanted, what's his name? Machete.
Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo, yes. Yeah, they wanted Danny Trejo as Lobo.
He could be good, man. And he could use a little makeup, but he'd have to shave his mustache.
Doesn't Lobo have a goatee? Or a mustache?
He's got, like, facial tattoos.
I always thought he had, like, a mustache.
And he's supposed to be at least 6 foot tall, not 5 foot seven.
Is that how tall Danny Trejo is?
Yes.
Oh, they can make it work. Tom Cruise looks tall in movies.
That's because he has 6-inch platforms on his heels.
Lobo can rock some big boots too. That'll make it work.
Some big old Gene Simmons kiss boots.
Yeah, it would work. It works for the character. My favorite is Fee Waybill from The Tubes, because he rocked those platform heels, but it was just like this crazy joke. So they're like 4 foot platinum or platform heels.
From who? From what?
Fee Waybill from the band The Tubes. He had this like character that he would do on stage called Quaalude. So when they'd play like White Punks on Dope, he'd come out in these like 4 foot platforms.
Nice.
I hear the
He still does it too, God bless him.
I hear the term Quaalude. All of a sudden Bill Cosby comes to mind.
Do you remember a few years ago when Bill Cosby led the charge against the N-word, where he was like, you know, we're not going to say it, you know, and all this? Yeah. Who would have thought his N-word was the word no?
And with that, let's get into some Dave news.
Joining us now here in Los Angeles, Dave. That's his name, Dave.
You know why I love the news? It's so topical.
All right, I've got one. I don't know how topical this is, but this is about David Lee Roth. This is from splitsider.com. David Lee Roth's The Roth Show is more ridiculous and absurd than any intentionally comedic podcast. Yeah. And it's just this review of his podcast, but it is remarkably written, this review, and it makes me just want to check it out. As somebody who has long found Roth morbidly fascinating, I was overjoyed to stumble across something called The Roth Show on iTunes a few years back. Here we go. I was both overjoyed and disappointed to discover that The Roth Show is no slickly produced operation. Nope, it's pretty much nothing but a seemingly cocaine and Red Bull-fueled Roth talking about nonsense into a microphone for an extended period of time. Oh, the Roth Show was no conversation. Nope, in true David Lee Roth form, it was a monologue from a man who never tires of his own voice, a man who embodies the concept of talking for the sake of talking in its purest, most entertaining, and insufferable form. Roth clearly sees himself as a jazz soloist of talking, a hep cat with a funky vibe, and a lot of crazy stories all the cool cats and sexy mommies can't wait to hear. I gotta find, there's this, on the 13th episode of The Roth Show, titled Alcohol and Cigarettes, A Personal History, Part 1, Old Man Roth favors listeners with a free associative ramble all about how, as a young man, he and his buddy would play this thing called keggers, where there was this thing called a keg, and it had lots of beer in it, and the dudes would all be trying to drink ice-cold Budweisers because they loved to party, and also Budweiser came in a can, but it was unlike the cans of other beers that Roth drank as a young man from companies like Schlitz and Blatz, but then there was also cheap wine, and that was a crazy wang doodle as well. So The Roth Show seems fascinating, and I'm going to have to check it out now because I like me some David Lee Roth, and I know he's absurd and ridiculous, but that's kind of why I like him. It's been a weird Dave news week, so that was that just seemed like an interesting talking point because I love me some Dave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, David Lee Roth. Okay, so Van Halen. David Lee Roth years are the best, right?
Yeah, I would give it to him. I mean, definitely not what Gary Cherone or whatever.
I mean, Sammy Hagar did have a few great Van Halen songs, but come on, you can't have Van Halen without David Lee Roth.
Yeah, I mean, I like some Sammy years stuff too, but it's different. Yeah. And I think the fact that Sammy could play guitar allowed Eddie to get into some more synthesizer stuff, and you know, they had a second guitar player. You know.
Yeah, you know what it is? David Lee Roth Van Halen is like Superman 1 and 2. And Sammy Hagar Van Halen is like the other Superman movies.
That's fucking brilliant. Yeah, and then Gary Cherone is that horrible reboot where, like, Superman was a deadbeat dad. The Kevin Spacey one, right? And then all of the failed reunions are the new ones, the Zack Snyder ones. That's a perfect comparison. Van Halen is the Superman movies. Each version is doomed to fail in a completely new and different way. What was there? Didn't they have that Pepsi commercial? It was Crystal right. Pepsi, right? That was, yeah. Van Halen, the Right Now right song. Now.
Yeah.
Was that for Crystal Pepsi?
Yes.
I remember that stuff.
And they're bringing Crystal Pepsi back. Hopefully not with that song, though.
Oh, man, it would be great if they just used all the old promos for it. I want to feel like it's 1992 again or whatever.
I just remember the Saturday Night Live fake commercial for Crystal Gravy.
Crystal Gravy sounds like a porn actress.
Probably is.
We got to get Crystal Gravy on the podcast.
All right, hold on. Hobson. Crystal Gravy. Get her on the list. Okay, he's got it. Okay, my new story, the Hay Festival 2016, David Gilmour and Polly Sampson talk marriage, making music, and the trouble with Pink Floyd. And really? If this goddamn Target pop-up ad would move, I could read the article.
It's not Target, it's Target. It's French.
I was at work one time, and it was like my first time starting in this new office. And I went in there and I sat down at my computer, and the boss was trying to show me some things. And the computer that I was working on was so infested with like porn pop-ups. And I'm just sitting there, and like gay porn ad pop-up shows up out of nowhere. And I was like, what's this all about? And he's like, yeah, it does that. Just like, deal with it, bro. Here's your computer. It's full of viruses.
Clear your cookies, motherfucker.
Yeah.
It's called private browsing.
AVG is free.
ADW cleaner will take care of that for you.
Polly Sampson has written lyrics for her husband, David Gilmour, for 20 years. Roger Waters' verdict on Pink Floyd's 1994 album, The Division Bell, was exactly what Polly Sampson had been dreading since her husband, David Gilmour, had convinced her to take credit for her contribution. Getting the wife to write the lyrics? How tragic, is what Roger Waters said. The couple can laugh about it now. As Sampson says, Waters would never be able to get away with his sexist jibe in 2016, but the memory still makes her curl into a protective ball. At the time, it felt awful. It stung. The Division Bell was only the second album Gilmour had made with the band after Waters' acrimonious departure in 1985. And it's just a whole article of them talking about her writing for Pink Floyd. I know so little about Pink Floyd. Does this make sense, Polly Sampson writing for Pink Floyd? Is that jibe yeah. well with Pink Floyd fans?
I didn't know that, but you know, Tom Waits has his wife working on his lyrics since he married her. I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of nice. That's cool that that she can contribute, but I don't know. You know, I gotta say, that's not an era of Pink Floyd that I'm a big fan of. It's okay. Division Bell is okay, but you know, I'd prefer it if Roger Waters wrote the lyrics.
Yeah. You know, this article goes on to say Sampson, whose mother is half Chinese, was really frightened that she'd find herself on the receiving end of the misogynist orientalist bullshit that's been dealt out to Yoko Ono.
I was just going to say, hell, Yoko Ono wrote a couple of John Lennon songs.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's she goes on to say, today, I'd love to be compared to her. She's an inspiration. A woman in her 80s still making great art. I don't know about that.
I wouldn't go that far.
I mean, I don't dispute the fact that she's in her 80s.
No, but great art? What illicit drugs is she taking?
I think that she's sort of a transgressive artist. And I think she's interesting. I mean, John Lennon fell in love with her because of an installation piece that she did, where it was just a ladder with a magnifying glass hanging from the ceiling, and you would climb up this ladder and grab the magnifying glass and look, and tiny written on the ceiling would be this word, yes. And he was just like, it was so positive, it just moved me, and I fell in love with her. And you're like, well, that's kind of neat. And she's got artistic vision. And I like some of the music she's done with Polyphonic Spree, where they kind of concentrated the crazy in an interesting way. She's definitely an artist. I don't know about a great artist, but definitely an artist, definitely an inspiration. Yoko, I know you're a big fan. Can't wait to have you on the podcast.
Have you guys heard her performing at the art show?
I'm not sure.
No.
This is her performing at the Voice Piece for Soprano and Wish Tree at MoMA.
Holy shit, that sounds so pretentious.
I'm waiting for a goat to start belting.
No, I'm sorry, that was her mic'd up in the bathroom. Hold on, let me find.
I was going to say, we at least know her Itachi works.
It sounds a lot like Mike Patton did some like actually impressive a cappella voice stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing that was crazy was it was stuff like that, like making noises with his mouth, but he was reading something off of a sheet, like a sheet of paper. It was like, what could your fucking notes be? Like, and now's the part where you go, ow, 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 like, you know, like, how do you write that shit down? If she was reading that off of sheet music, I would be impressed. But I doubt that. I think she just went out there and just did whatever the fuck she felt like and went, or whatever the hell she was doing. I mean, I guess that's fucking music. I guess it counts. Like, Merzbow is a thing. Like, noise music exists.
It's called Itachi on level 4.
The fact that she's in her 80s doing this shit is kind of remarkable, though, right? Because you couldn't imagine, like, your grandpa, like going out and doing shit like this, could you?
I can see my mom do it. My mom does do stuff like this. Well, she doesn't do that, but... My mom's getting up in almost her 80s, and she's out there performing in like church choirs and stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of cool.
That'd be so badass if she just rocked a Yoko like performance in the church choir.
If they just gave her a solo, you know.
I was at a bar once, and there was a chick singing karaoke. Like I used to say when I went to bars, like everywhere I go, it's always karaoke night. Yeah. This is the fucking worst. I hate karaoke night. But there was a chick who came out and did a Doors song, and I called her fucking Yoko Morrison because it was tremendous. She just screeched into the microphone while the Doors music played in the background, fell to the floor screaming and shaking, just like. Song was finished. A dude came into the bar, scooped her up, carried her out the door. That was it. It was fucking tremendous. For just like a bar in the middle of the desert, it was one of the most remarkable pieces of music I've ever seen in my life.
Have a seizure?
Yeah, I mean, I basically watched a tiny drunk Asian woman lose her shit at karaoke night. It was remarkable.
Was Biling okay?
Biling. I have no idea. Carried out of the bar by some dude who I hope she came with.
You know, I tried to perform karaoke once. I was out on a date, and the woman I was with was encouraging me to get up on stage. She wanted me to perform a song for her. I can't sing for shit. And I sang my song. I can't even remember what it was. But at the end of it, walking off stage, one of the dudes who was sitting at a table just called out to me. He's like, dude, you couldn't carry a note in a bucket.
See, if you're a shit singer, your go-to karaoke song should be Biz Markie.
No,
that's
that
a
was,
perfect song.
I thought that was set up for Turn the Page by Bob Seger or Picture by Kid Rock.
I mean, I've seen so many bad renditions of that Kid Rock song. Yeah. It's just like a perfect duet song. So you just see drunk couples doing it. Yeah. Biz Markie is good. And then you remember that song from like the early 90s? The "Babe, I love you so, and I want you to know." Like anybody could do an impression of that guy, right? Please don't go. Don't go.
Or Michael McDonald.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Okay. We're not in love anymore.
That's fucking perfect. That's a perfect like McDonald's.
The only reason why I keep forgetting is because it's the Warren G song "Regulate."
Right.
Oh, yeah. You're right. It is. Yeah. Regulators, mount up.
I could just imagine Michael McDonald doing the Nate Dogg thing. Just call my homeboys on the RBC.
Are we going to have a Michael McDonald off?
Yeah. Michael McDonald's got some great, like it's such dad music.
Come on, he was in the band called the Doobie Brothers. You can't go wrong with it.
Wait, how does Michael McDonald sound? Let me
I'm waiting for this episode to come out, and you guys be like, okay, who had the better Michael McDonald? And just put that poll out there for everybody to vote.
A Twitter poll. Who won the Michael McDonald off?
Oh, you got to do a little, what a fool believes, the bad McDonald better.
Okay, I've already put it out there that I can't sing, but so let's see. My Michael McDonald. We'll be dancing in the moonlight, smiling with the rising sun.
Okay, clip that audio and just raise the octave about three times and you'll hit it. You know,
if we were,
I got a new ringtone.
If we were doing a Rick Astley off, I might be able to compete.
If you won't, never gonna let you down.
Never gonna run around or desert you.
Never gonna give, never gonna give.
Yes! That's a good Astley. You know, everybody was surprised when they saw that video and were like, that guy's white?
We're no strangers to love. You know rules, and so do I.
Have you seen the video?
Oh, man, that's your karaoke song. Like, you can fucking nail it.
And let's give them
the Rick Astley's pairing with Smells Like Teen Spirit.
No, oh, that mashup.
Do I need to pull that up?
Yes. The music for Smells Like Teen Spirit, but the lyrics to Never Gonna Give You Up. An amazing mashup.
All right, here's a little bit of Never Gonna Give You Up, Teen Spirit. I have a new favorite song.
I know, right? It's almost as good as Psychosocial Baby or Call Me a Hole.
I don't know those songs.
Call Me Maybe.
Okay.
With Head Like a Hole lyrics.
Nice, nice.
Then there's Psychosocial Baby, which is the lyrics of Psychosocial by Slipknot to the music of Baby by Justin Bieber.
Oh, 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 oh. I did my time and I went out. So if you say I'm fine, it doesn't cut. The soul is not so vibrant. The reckoning, the sickening. Back at Jake's up first.
Well, let's get into it. Let's get into our Dave Gilmore. What do you say?
Sure.
All right, in that case, let's jump into our featured Dave.
Here comes the featured Dave. Here comes the featured Dave.
And also, for full disclosure, I listened to my first Pink Floyd, two Pink Floyd albums yesterday.
Which two?
The Wall and Dark Side of the Moon.
Perfect. Very good. Classics.
That's a Yeah, good two to get into. What'd you think?
Can I hit you up for a Frank Langella impression?
Yeah.
The thing I tweeted out at you yesterday.
Oh, man, I can't remember what you tweeted at me.
I think I tweeted something like, I am not enjoying this.
This stoner music is beneath me.
So underwhelmed, man.
I was, maybe because I had put Pink Floyd up there on that shelf where so many people revere Pink Floyd. And I thought it was one of those classic bands that everyone is supposed to love. And I'm telling you, man, I didn't love it.
Huh? I mean, I grew up with it, so I kind of don't know a world without Pink Floyd, but, yeah, that's shocking to me.
Well, I mean, rather than me shitting on anything, why don't you guys tell me why you love Pink Floyd so much?
Pink Floyd to me was a very, it's a band where you kind of have to focus on it, and then they will take you places. Like Dark Side of the Moon is like an audio experience to behold. It takes you on a journey. And then the lyrics are meaningful and simple. You know, like The Wall is filled with all of this emotion and all of these audio clips, and The Wall really tells a tremendous story as well about, you know, the character's history with the war and his building isolation and his issues with the audience and his hatred and anxiety. It wasn't cool back then to discuss anxiety and illness and those sorts of issues. It was sort of groundbreaking for them to do something that was that emotional at the time. And then even stuff like Dark Side of the Moon, I like the sort of spacey trippiness and long songs, like Great Gig in the Sky is remarkable. That vocal performance is tremendous. I like the fact that it's one of those bands that'll give you an album like Animals that's like three 13-minute long songs.
Yeah.
And you just really get to experience them. Granted, I was a Pink Floyd fan as a kid. A lot of people consider it like stoner rock or, you know, stuff that it's just sweet to smoke weed and listen to. Here's a little tip. All music sounds rad when you're stoned.
Yeah, but see, but I don't smoke weed. And so, like, when I tweeted that out there, one of the first things that the Mr. BS Show tweeted back at us was, oh, you need to be smoking weed to be listening to this.
See, I disagree with that. I mean, but I was a fan before I ever got into weed, you know, as a teenager. But I mean, it does sound pretty rad when you're stoned, though.
Dave, do you have thoughts on David Gilmour, Pink Floyd?
With me, I didn't get into Pink Floyd until I was probably 12 years old when I walked in on a couple friends watching The Wall and just hearing the music in it, not even paying attention to the visuals of the movie itself, just listening to the music, it took me to a different place. Granted, they were smoking, so I was getting the contact buzz. But, I mean, the music alone is transcending. And like OC said with Animals, the three 13-minute songs, you have an entire album called Shine On Crazy Diamond. 13 tracks, all one song that's broken up into 9-minute songs. And it's just mind-blowing.
I see that this music is not something to be listened to. It's something to be experienced.
I think it's something to be listened to, though. You know, I think, you know, you got Time. Time is a phenomenal song. You didn't like Time from Dark Side?
No, Time was all right. I guess the biggest... Well, okay, before I jump into my thoughts on Pink Floyd, let me hit him up proper and give him just to paint a little bit of a picture of David Gilmour. And this is just going to come straight from Wikipedia. John David Gilmour. I did. I was short on time on researching
good.
This.
I just recently made some fun edits, so let's see if we can spot the fiction.
David John Gilmour is born March 1946, is an English songwriter, singer, composer, and record producer. He joined the progressive rock band Pink Floyd as guitarist and co-lead vocalist in 1968. Effectively as a replacement for founder Syd Barrett, who left the band shortly afterwards. Pink Floyd subsequently achieved international success with the concept albums The Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, Animals, and The Wall. By the early 1980s, they had become one of the most critically acclaimed and best-selling acts in the history of popular music.
What I think is kind of cool is David Gilmour came in to replace Syd Barrett when Syd Barrett kind of lost his shit. But he also befriended Syd and helped him complete solo albums. I mean, so you don't often see that. Like, Sammy Hagar didn't bro down with fucking David Lee Roth when he replaced him in the band, you know? But David, by all accounts, is a nice guy. And, but I gotta say, I like David Lee Roth and Roger Waters together. Apart, I'm not a big fan of anything that they've done. Roger Waters is too weird. And David Gilmour is too boring on their own. Like, you need somebody to boring out the weird, and then you have this magical mix of weird. Yeah. I'd call it David Gilmour like the fucking wet blanket of Pink Floyd. Like, Roger Waters is this weirdo, and he just needs to be calmed down a little bit, and then it's wonderful. I mean, I like some stuff on The Division Bell. Learning to Fly is a good song. There's some good songs on there. But that era of Pink Floyd wasn't giving me an experience. It didn't give me a full album that was interesting. And then Roger Waters did, what's that, that Hitchhiker's album? I don't know, fucking Google it or whatever. it's interesting. There's some good songs. It's interesting, but it's not Pink Floyd. And, you know, the Final Cut was a good way to just call it a day. I think they should have just stopped at that album, called Pink Floyd over, and that's it. You've given us classic albums. We're good. I'm happy with it.
I thought Pulse was an amazing album that they released. It was the last album with all the original members, including Syd Barrett, before he passed away.
I didn't know Syd was on that.
Yeah.
Was he just moaning in the background or something? What the hell was he doing? Like, he's been pretty out of it.
He was playing background percussion.
Oh, perfect. The Stamos spot, right?
Yes.
Fucking exactly. Stamos and the Beach Boys. Here's some congas. Try not to be too loud. And then you whisper to the tech not to mic them.
So you
just unplug Stamos's mic, or like fucking Andy Garcia in the Miami Sound Machine. You're like, what the hell? Does every celebrity play congas in a band now? See fucking Clooney with the Pet Shop Boys or something. Clooney would probably be like playing bongos for Radiohead or Coldplay.
So here's some of the notes that I jotted down, because you had asked me, you know, wasn't Time a good song? So I jotted down a couple notes while listening to Dark Side of the Moon. So on second track, On the Run, I was sitting there and I just wrote, On the Run, - WTF.
Good call. Good call. Definitely a weird, you know, the intro is great with Breathe. I think that's wonderful. And those lyrics are so perfect because they're so simple, you know? Yeah.
And then I made a note that says album finally gets into kicking with time.
It does. It finally starts rocking there.
And then
I could do without the fucking minute of alarm clock noises, though. Thanks for that, Roger Waters, because I know that's not a David Gilmour move to be like, how about we do a minute, 30 seconds of fucking alarm clocks? And then it carries on and on with the dong, boop, 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 you know, the Andy Garcia conga part.
I did write. I did jot down at that part. This sounds like a demo track that got mixed up with someone's audio effects library.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it to you. It's fucking weird, but I appreciate the art in it. But it's a bit Yoko Ono-y.
And then, let's see, I also, some other notes that I wrote down, I feel like I need to go buy a panel then and paint a big Star Wars mural on it.
Get one of those fuzzy glow-in-the-dark posters on the inside, like a blacklight poster.
Oh, yeah, and lay down carpet on the inside of the van. Not just on the floor, but on the walls, too.
Fuck yeah. That's because you don't want your lady friend bumping her head up against the metal.
Right.
I think the track that I would cut from Dark Side is Money.
Yes.
Mm, yeah.
I'm sick of that song. I'm just sick of it. It's the only song that gets airplay because I'm sick of it.
And the opener for how many financial talk shows?
I mean, I don't know. It's interesting to try and look at this through your eyes. Like, if I wasn't a Pink Floyd fan since birth, how would I like this album now? I'm probably, because I'm into weird shit, but...
Well, I think for me, it brings up a whole bunch of really weird feelings about the 70s, because I grew up through the 70s, and I remember, like, the 70s were just a shitty time in America. You know, being a kid, sitting in the backseat of your mom's hot Volvo that doesn't have air conditioning, and you have to wait in line to get gas. Like, gas lines were like a block and a half long, and, you know, smog was ridiculous in L.A., the kind of smog that, like, when you run outside and play, you come back inside and your lungs hurt. And, like, 70s were just a bad time, and listening to this music brought all of that back, rushing back to me.
How about The Wall?
The Wall was better.
Any bright spots on that for you?
I mean, a lot of those songs I had heard before. I mean, like, I've never actually sat down and listened to The Wall back to front, but, you know, just absorbing it in, you know, hanging out with friends, someone's playing it on, you know, in the dorm room or whatever. So I've heard all of The Wall, and it's good. It's a good album. But I did write, the note that I wrote was, what the fuck? You can't dance to it. You can't fuck to it. You can't play this at a family picnic.
I have done the second one.
I think it is very much like loner music. I like to listen to Pink Floyd alone, light some incense, fucking hang out, get sad, get weird, get high. Like, it's like, it's great music to just have on alone and experience it. Like, have you ever, there's a Magic Carpet Ride by Steppenwolf. He says the line, I like to dream right between the sound machines.
Yeah.
Apparently, he had a pillow and giant speakers on either side and would just lay down and listen to music like that. So I tried to do that once, and it was phenomenal. It's a great way to listen to music. Just lay back, close your eyes, put on like Sgt. Pepper's, something like that, and just experience it.
Yeah.
Floyd is one of those bands that you can sit down and experience it. It's almost like an audio adventure. You know, it's like a movie.
Like, you can't, I think the problem is I listened to it. I didn't experience it.
I would put Animals as like my top 10 road trip albums. Animals is phenomenal on a road trip. But I don't know if you'd like Animals because it's very like stony, weird, long songs, you know, jammy. But it's just kind of one of those great atmosphere albums where as you're driving and, you know. I think that's phenomenal. They did an album about an Orwell book. That album is all about Animal Farm and, you know.
Yeah,
The Wall is tremendously personal and this interesting sort of intense story. And then Dark Side of the Moon is all about life. So fun fact about Dark Side of the Moon, because I've seen every documentary about it and read all the shit about that album. They did these recordings with like engineers for some of the samples in there. You know, it'd be like, let me think of some of the audio samples in there.
We need a minute and a half of alarm clocks.
But some of the audio cues, they had just interviewed people, and it was things like, have you ever been violent? Were you in the right? So they had asked all these questions. They actually got Paul McCartney to be one of the voices that they recorded, but they couldn't use it because he was too performance-y, you know?
Mm.
I just thought that was an interesting thing. So someplace on the cutting room floor is a Paul McCartney interview from Pink Floyd.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, my response is like, you know, part of it, I'm playing it up. I'm being hyperbolic for comedy's sake. I will revisit these albums given the right circumstances, you know, like one night late at night and I'm just chilling and I want to just get into that zone. I see there is a place for this music for me. But what's the place for this music for you, Dave?
For me, pretty much any time, mostly when I'm trying to like relax and get out of my head, that's when I'll listen to it.
Yeah, I could see how this takes you on that ride of shutting down thinking and just kind of going with a feeling.
The Wall is an amazing album to solo drink to. Just throwing it out there. I mean, if you're ever feeling shitty and you just want to like have a good cry and a bottle of whiskey, The Wall is your best friend.
And Dark Side of the Moon, if you do it just right. Rumors are true. Line it up with the third Lion Roar in the MGM signature intro. It'll pair up amazingly to Wizard of Oz.
It's pretty phenomenal. I've done it before. I did it stoned once, and then I did it not stoned another time.
Yeah.
And it matches up. There's some pretty interesting parallels there, but I do think that's probably coincidence.
Well, that's something I do want to experience, and I'll include a link to this in the show notes over on Vimeo. Someone's actually done that. It's called Dark Side of the Rainbow, and they lined it up for you, and you could just sit down and watch it and enjoy it.
There used to be bootleg DVDs that people would sell out of their truck and shit with that, like, you know, Dark Side of Oz or all the different titles. But yeah, I think that's been like a longstanding sort of bootleg thing cruising around. But the problem is that the album ends before the movie ends.
Not if you put it on repeat.
Oh, yeah.
Because it'll still sync. That's a weird thing. It will still sync.
You know, and actually we refer to it. I don't know if like people out there who don't know about this. It's called Dark Side of the Rainbow. It's also known as Dark Side of Oz or The Wizard of Floyd. And it refers to the pairing of the 1973 Pink Floyd album, The Dark Side of the Moon, with the visual portion of the 1939 film, The Wizard of Oz. And they just sync up amazingly.
Dude, let's do the fucking opposite. Let's take The Wizard of Oz. No, you know what? We go with the soundtrack to Wicked, and we will pair it up to the visuals of the movie The Wall and see what happens. Let's do this. You guys want to come over this weekend?
I'm fine.
No.
I'm ready to defy some gravity.
There was an article on Cracked, though. They tried to sync up different soundtracks with different albums. Yeah. It was pretty funny, you know. They're linking up like Master of Puppets with The Matrix, and they would write down like stuff that was interesting how it synced up.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm assuming coincidence, because I think it would be tremendously difficult for them to have done that on purpose and not talked about it, because they've talked about it so in depth, you know, how they've done all this stuff for the album. And I've watched so many different interviews with various people. It would have been impossible to do that and not have that movie on at all times while making this album, you know?
Yeah. But let's continue to talk about how great Wicked is. Christian Chenoweth is a national treasure. And I'm saying this sincerely. I know I'm joking, but I love Christian Chenoweth. Here's how cool Christian Chenoweth is. No, okay, I'm not going to take us down this detour. Never mind.
Dude, I mean, I've gotten way too personal about my love of musicals on alternate endings. So, I mean, it's your turn, bro. Everyone has a secret pain. Share yours with me.
Oh, God. Seriously, do you want me to get into this?
There actually was a David in the cast of Wicked.
Okay, we're doing a Wicked episode. Okay, so no, we are fans of the TV show Pushing Daisies.
Oh, gotta love it.
Yeah, and she's in that. And we have a little dog named Olive, who we named after her character on Pushing Daisies, Olive Snook. And for a couple of other reasons, too, but that's one of the reasons why we named our dog Olive. And a friend of ours was at Starbucks and called me and my wife and said, Kristen Chenoweth is here at Starbucks right now. And I said, okay, thanks. Hung up the phone, grabbed my dog, and ran down the street because I wanted to be like, we named our dog after you. But then how weird of an exchange is that? So it's bizarre. It's weird. It's the kind of thing that fan, you know, like, first of all, I'm popping up out of nowhere. How did I, you know, it's like weird. So I played it cool, and I was pretending to trying to figure out, like, I'm tying up my dog to the newspaper stand so I could go in and get some coffee, but I was pretending to have a much harder time of it than I actually was. And she came out of Starbucks, saw this, and I knew for a fact that she loves little Maltese dogs because she has a couple, or she has one. And she saw me doing this. She came up to me and said, would you like me to watch your dog for you while you get your coffee? And I said, yes, that would be fantastic. Thank you. Went inside. And then, but, you know, by the way, when I ran to Starbucks to meet her, I left my wife in the dust. She was trying to come. She was like way behind. I just bolted down the street with a dog in my arm like I was a running back.
So you were trying to pull the Dudley Moore from Arthur. You can't leave me now. I just named my dog after you.
Yes. So when I came out, my wife and her were talking with, you know, and the dog, and she had explained that we named our dog after you, and oh my God, like, she pretended, she played it cool. She was like, oh my God, you're Kristen Chenoweth, you know, that whole deal. So, but yeah, that's how we met her, and she was super sweet. We told her that we love her, her music, the TV show, the whole nine yards.
Oh, we just lost so many listeners.
Fuck you. I told you not was going to tell it.
Hold on. Let alone man cards have to be revoked.
Hey, man, I went on and on about Ted Neely is my Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
I worship at the altar of Andrew Lloyd Webber, so I'll give it to you, man. I even enjoy the pajama game. There you go. That's an embarrassing one.
Boom. There it is.
I was a yep. president of a community theater organization for 6 years.
You'd win, bro.
Dude, I'm taking your man card to replace mine.
Which one? I got 50 of them because I've been collecting them from people.
Just revoking them.
Exactly. Give me that.
Just every time somebody says something lame, like, I love Kesha, you're like, whoop.
It's like, either give me your bank card or get Rochambeau'd.
My wife makes me sit down to pee because she doesn't like it when I whoop. I'm going to introduce this man card noise. I fucking love it. It's like, not for nothing, but I mean, Bea Arthur was a beautiful woman. Whoop! You know, I'm not going to lie. My wife made me watch it, but I kind of enjoyed The Notebook. Whoop!
Did you cry too when Dr. McDreamy died?
Whoop!
Any guy that knows the reference Dr. McDreamy should get their Carter Bolt.
I fucking nailed it on Password and then an episode.
Oh, yeah. The Dr. McDreamy and Quinn
Dr.
Medicine
Quinn
Woman.
Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. Yeah, man. I'm a Shane Seymour fan.
What? Did she?
Does she have like a name for her fans? They'd be like Quinn Heads or like
Quintessentials.
Yes, the Quintessentials.
Here's one other thing that kind of stuck in my craw about. If you guys are going to talk love about Pink Floyd, I got another thing. So I was looking up how revered this band is, and I wanted to see, according to Rolling Stone, on the top 100 albums of all time, where they ranked. The highest they ranked was number 43 with Dark Side of the Moon, which is respectable.
That's bullshit, though.
You think Dark it should Side, go higher?
Yeah, Dark Side was on the Billboard like 100 charts for something like 30 years.
Gilmore was ranked number 14 for Rolling Stone for the greatest guitarist of all time.
Well, now that's weird. How could you rank 14 but only have the 43rd highest album of all time? But here's what did bug me. Dark Side of the Moon ranked higher than Meet the Beatles, Electric Ladyland, Songs in the Key of Life, Billy Joel's The Stranger, Purple Rain, and Graceland.
I'd say rightfully so.
Really?
I think Dark Side of the Moon is probably top 10. If I remember, wasn't the top one Sgt. Pepper, right?
Yeah.
And then the second one was...
Pet Sounds,
yeah. Right. And, you know, fuck Pet Sounds. It's okay, but it's not number 2. Give me a break. But Dark Side should be up there. I would definitely say top 10.
Wow.
So it was on the Billboard top LP and tapes charts for 741 weeks from 1973 to 1988. Estimated 45 million copies sold.
And it went back up on the charts for another like 2 months once the album hit its 25th anniversary.
It did. Yeah, it popped back up again. It's phenomenal. I mean, it's great. I feel like we've done David Gilmour such a disservice. Like, we're going to get shit from the fans because this is so little Pink Floyd talk. But Pink Floyd rules. And if you don't know that, you know, go check them out. I don't know if they will. If people don't like Pink Floyd, they're just going to hear your review and be like, man, sounds like I can fucking skip it.
When I edit this episode, I'm going to cut out all the David Gilmour talk and just make it all Chenoweth all the time.
New podcast? The fucking man card sound.
Chat and Chenoweth.
Whoop. Oh, boy. I mean, I'm down for it, but I do 27 podcasts as it is.
No, he'll make a special Dave episode, which is just you proclaiming your love for Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Then every Adam so often David in the background, Sandler. Whoop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope the fucking man card makes it onto your podcast, too, man. I'm going to be listening for it.
I don't know if I have a guilty pleasure like that Sandler. Nothing that bad. That's pretty bad, dude. His movies are so shitty. I never really thought of it. Like, I think he has like maybe 3 solid movies and the rest are just kind of like, meh. I feel the same way about Will Ferrell, Jim Carrey. Like, they have maybe 3 solid movies and all the rest are just kind of like, eh, let's let them fucking, don't give him a script, just let him act an ass and maybe people will find it funny. And then people get tired of it.
Yeah.
I'll lose right. My man card for saying my guilty pleasure movie.
Well, go ahead. You got 50 of them.
A Walk to Remember.
Oh, dude. Is that Keanu Reeves or is that
Channing Tatum?
That's not just whoop. That's whoop, 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 whoop.
Are you playing
Cuber? That's a whoop a minute movie.
He just lost 10 man cards right there. And you only had 2 more to get to a 52 deck. Now you gotta start over.
Well, you just took the 10 that I took from you guys just from this episode alone.
I'm negative. I am in man card debt.
You have creditors coming after you. We need more man cards from you. Come on.
Like the movie Better Off Dead. I want my 2 man cards.
Damn, parents throwing away a perfectly good white boy like that.
Yes.
Okay, I think my man card movie is Steel Magnolias.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
He just goes into tilt. Boop, boop, boop. Just one solid sound. Boop, 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 boop.
He's flatlined.
He's flatlined.
He's out of cards.
All right. Should we put a wrap on David Gilmour?
Yeah, we fucked this one up.
How is that any different from any of the other shows that we've done?
I mean, I'm loving it.
All right. Okay, so putting a close to David Gilmour, we're going to get into the next segment of the show, which is Dave of the Week. It's time to learn the days of the week. It's time to learn the days of the week. It's time to learn the days of the week. Dave of the Week is a segment where Octopus Caveman will find a great Dave on Twitter, and I also will find a great Dave on Twitter. we're going to have a Dave off to see who has the Dave of the week. And Dave the Nerd, if you wouldn't mind being the officiator of this contest.
Sure.
My Dave of the week contestant is at Dave Hace 1. Oh, by the way, he goes by Angry Duck. So some of the tweets that Angry Duck has been putting out. The world could be so much cleaner if we just gave blind people brooms instead of canes. Here's another one from Angry Duck. I've decided not to have kids. The kids are taking it pretty hard.
That's brilliant.
Let's see. He played the hashtag game Washington, D.C., a movie, and said 16 scandals.
That's good.
Here's another hashtag game that he played. Hashtag meat-free movies, blazing salads.
That's good.
Hashtag meat-free movies, Planet of the Grapes. Hashtag meat-free movies, Mango Unchained.
That's good.
Yeah, and here's my last one. Here's my last hashtag meat-free movie, My Big Fat Greek Salad.
That's good.
All right. What do you got, buddy, for your Twitter, Dave?
I believe David Dight, D-Y-T-E. He's at SPI Baseball. Hashtag my advice to graduates. Dark Side of the Moon and hash brownies are your friends. Thought it was topical. Hashtag my summer plans are secret because the first rule of Fight Club is, oh, crap. Hashtag upside of hell. Easy commute from Brooklyn.
Nice. I like All that. Right. I like that one a lot.
This I loved. Out there fan theory. At the end of Game of Thrones, we see Riker and Troy emerge from the holodeck.
Mind blown.
That's awesome.
R.I.P. Gordie Howe, forever immortalized as the face of Woodrow Wilson.
All right.
That's a deep Simpsons reference, so not everybody's going to get that one, but I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
This one's great. Hashtag six-word story. To work, the time machine appears. All right. I loved it, but I guess you guys didn't.
No. I was like, what, is there something deeper there that I'm not getting?
No. Me and like four other people on Twitter fucking love that one. David, keep up the good work because I love it. Surprising yard sale finds Jimmy Hoffa. That's my Dave. Fuck you guys. I love David Dight.
He has some good stuff.
I got more lives of that Dave instead of yours, so sorry.
So David Dight is the
Dave of the week.
Fair enough.
All right.
OC, please give the Twitter handle for David one more time.
It is at SPI Baseball.
There's your mission, folks. Go out there and follow, retweet, like, and send some encouraging thoughts his way to keep him going on Twitter. David Dight. And that's our Dave of the week. We just learned the days of the week. Thanks again, Dave. Appreciate you coming on, especially like you took a chance on us, like you don't know who we are. And I hope you had a good time.
Yeah, it was entertaining.
Had a lot of fun. Dave the Nerd, hey buddy, can you please tell us a little bit about your podcast?
Well, my podcast is a nerd and geek culture. I cover pretty much anything from comic books, movies, literature, video games, tabletop games, even music. I mean, I'll cover everything. If it's nerdy or if you can be passionate about it, it'll be on DNC.
What got you started podcasting?
Say the Facts of Life theme song.
Actually, it was me just listening to a bunch of podcasts and being like, you know what? There's not many that are about nerd and geek culture. We got to get this out here because pop culture's taking off. You got shows like The Big Bang Theory that are real big, comic book shows like The Walking Dead and Comic Book Men that are making their way into fame. It's time to let your geek and nerd flag fly. So that's what got me into doing it.
Yeah, it is a really cool time in today's culture where you can be a nerd and people are cool with it.
Yeah, and they're not trying to push you into a locker.
How long you been doing it, man?
Been podcasting for about 2.5 years.
Clearly you're digging it.
Hell, I have technically 3 shows that I'm on.
Oh, what show? What are the other shows?
Well, I got DNC. Then for the same network, I also do a weekly comic book list telling all the comic books that are coming out for that week. In case you don't know what's coming out, I'll let you know. Then me and my buddy John do a drinking podcast at least once a month called I'm Thirsty, where we'll get together, try to come up with a theme for the show, but it's all just us wanting to sit down and drink. So we'll like pick lagers, and we'll try to do some education about lagers and sample a couple different lagers.
Buddy, I appreciate you coming on the show and for being our first official Dave guest.
Yeah, it's an honor to be on a show named after me, although it wasn't, but I'm saying it is.
All right, so that's going to do it for another episode of Dave. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can find us over at Dave Podcast, which, by the way, you can follow us, but we're not going to follow you because we only follow Dave's from that account. But the other accounts that we're very active on, if you want a great, funny Twitter account to follow, follow Octopus Caveman, at Octopus Caveman. And for me, if you want to find a whole bunch of podcasts that come out of Potter and Family and updates to the Dave Podcast, you can follow me over at Green Korean One. Do you have a Twitter, Dave?
Yes, I do. Dave the Nerd _DNC.
So, for another episode of the Dave Podcast, I'm the Green Korean.
I am Octopus Caveman.
Like sand through the hourglass, these are the Daves of our lives.
We are the Daves he knows, he knows. We are the Daves he knows.
These are the Daves I know, I know.
We are the Daves he knows.
Now these are the Daves.